GX on Agriculture with Rod McDonald.
Good afternoon. Welcome to today's program. It's 16 after 12 after 1 in Manitoba. Coming up on GX on Agriculture today, of course, our Wednesday regulars. That includes the report from Heartland Livestock in Yorkton. Also, the Johnston's Grain Marketing Report. A little bit of a change on the Johnston's report today. We'll speak with Joel Makowski. He works out of Johnston's Calgary office. So interesting to hear how harvest is going out in Alberta, and we'll follow up on that with Joel Makowski on the program today. Of course, we will announce our winner this week in GX94's Supper in the Field contest. This is week 5 in Supper in the Field, the fall edition. And I made a draw this morning, and I'll pass along where we'll be headed with supper, courtesy of Kentucky Fried Chicken in Yorkton. Of course, we also leave our lucky winners with some prizes from our other sponsors, Pattison Agriculture in Yorkton and Sask Milk. Again, we'll tell you who our lucky winner is coming up just a little later on in the program today. And Statistics Canada released its model-based principal field crops estimates report this morning. Now, this is just the second year that StatsCan has used a model or model-based estimates, and it really differs rather significantly from the farmer survey that was conducted back in July. The production estimates using this model-based yields are as of the end of August, so there's bound to be some difference there, but the differences between the two reports were quite startling. And I spoke with Ken Ball, a commodities broker with PI Financial in Winnipeg, this morning about the report, and we'll get the details of the report and Ken's take on it coming up on the program today as well. First, though, the agriculture weather outlook gets us rolling here today. It's a presentation of Yorkton Raymore and Watrous New Holland and Sean Prihika, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
And it's time now for Precision Weather. Steve Adamson is filling in for Phil Spieback on the program today. Steve, now we have been looking at cloud and kind of cool, damp conditions here over the past week or so. Certainly a lot nicer day here today, but is this just a short reprieve, or is this actually the beginning of some nicer weather coming our way?
Well, I do think that we will keep things a bit on the brighter side, but it's not going to be an extended period of it, because I do see the risk of rain coming back into play by Friday. The general weather pattern is going to feature cooler than normal weather through the rest of the week, with the weather actually kind of chilly as we progress into Friday and the upcoming weekend. So this afternoon, not bad. It will be on the cool side with a mix of sun and cloud cover. The high temperature will be around 12. Tonight, chilly with some frost possible. Generally fair skies overall, the low temperature near 1. It'll stay cool tomorrow with mixed sun and cloud cover around. The high temperature will be about 11. And as we head into Friday, it'll be chilly with rain becoming likely, about an 80% chance of rain with a high right around 9. Saturday, lingering cloudiness and chilly temperatures, only 6 for the high. And Sunday, mainly cloudy with a few showers possible. And it will stay chilly with a high temperature right around 6 degrees. For GX94, I'm Precision Weather Meteorologist Steve Adamson.
Thank you, Steve. Now, turning to this hour's temperature roundup, 8 degrees in La Paz this afternoon. It's 9 in Shoal Lake Russell, along with Hudson Bay. 10 in Roblin, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, and Calvington. 11 degrees for Dauphin, Brandon, and Regina. 12 for Saskatoon and Swan River. In the Yorkton-Melville region, it's partly sunny, or mainly sunny if you're the eternal optimist. The wind is north-northwest at 12. Relative humidity, 51%, or temperature up 1 in the past hour, now 11. Yesterday's high and low, 7 and 2. Normals for this date would see daytime highs around 16, with overnight lows near 3. The coolest and warmest places in the province yesterday, Estevan, had the highest temperature in the province, recording a daytime high of 15. Key Lake, the coolest, at minus 5. Across the border in Manitoba, Kleefeld, The Manitoba hotspot at 19, and to Dooley Lake, the coolest place in Manitoba, with an overnight temperature of minus 5. Sunrise this morning, 6:31. The sun will set tonight at 6:56. Again, our current temperature is 11 degrees. It's 12:22, 1:22 in Manitoba. You're listening to GX on Agriculture.
Time now. Beef and Forage Report.
The Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association is urging hunters to ask permission before entering private farmland. The chair of the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association, Rick Toney from Gull Lake, says fall is a busy time and farmers may be harvesting or rounding up livestock. He says hunters should seek permission from landowners for safety reasons.
Well, it even says on your license that you should ask permission before you go on somebody's land. And we're looking at this, that the permission should always be asked. We're stewards of this land and we got to take care of it for to keep it sustainable, to protect the land in a biosecure manner. We have noxious weeds, invasive species that can be brought on. We have disease that can be brought on. Like if you take a look at, if you're a canola grower, clubroot, and you pick up clubroot on your tire on somebody's land and you drive onto another guy's land and you drop it off there, you've just spread clubroot around. There's animal diseases that could be spread from one place to another. They're not as prevalent as they are in other places, but that risk is out there. Noxious weeds and invasive species. We have leafy spurge that's taking over large tracts of land in Saskatchewan and is a real big concern. And if we want to keep our land sustainable and keep our native grasses in place for future generations and for years and years to come, we've got to be very conscious of this and keep our land. An oil company, if they want to come onto my land and drill an oil well, they would have to wash their rig and make sure that it was perfectly clean before they come on my land. So why would a hunter be of any difference? Like, we got to protect our land and protect it for all our future generations. And so that's one of the reasons. If we had some species at risk on our land, it's important for us to let hunters know where they are and what it's all about, so that we protect those species at risk. So that's another thing. Another thing why they should ask permission is hunter safety. If I've given permission for somebody to be on my land, and let's say it's a treed area, they could be shooting at something and there's other hunters there. They need to be aware of if there's other hunters there and keep it hunting in a safe form. So it hits a lot of issues why we want them to be asking permission, and it's for the betterment of everything for everybody. You know, and besides that, it's a courteous thing to do because we own the land. Why would you be going on somebody's land without permission?
The Saskatchewan government is conducting a review of trespass laws and may include a requirement that permission is always required before entering a rural property.
I think it's fantastic. That review should be there. And it should be a requirement that you have to ask permission before you go on somebody's land. That, to me, that's only common sense. And because people are always worried about food safety and things like this, and everybody wants to know where their food's coming from, and that we are proper stewards of the land. Well, we can't be proper stewards of the land if we can't control access on our land. And so if the public wants us to do these things, we need the tools to do it. And it only makes sense. I shouldn't come walking into your house or onto your property without permission or whatnot. And you shouldn't come onto our land. And it gets back to that biosecurity. It's good for everybody if we do this. And it's protecting this land for the future generations.
The federal government recently released a list of regions that will be eligible to defer the proceeds of the sale of breeding stock to the following year because they encountered drought conditions this year. APAS had asked that the entire province be eligible because there were producers in essentially all areas of the province that suffered from a lack of precipitation this year. The designated drought area outlined by the government last week follows a line south from Saskatoon, but excludes the eastern side of the province and parts of west central Saskatchewan.
When you have straight lines in these RMs and whatnot like that, droughts don't follow straight lines. We've heard of situations where somebody's just over into one RM next to where it ends, and the drought circled in. It hit a spot in that RM and a spot here. The SCA's position is that the whole province should be blanketed and it should be producer initiated, because you never know where it is, and it's a spot here and a spot there, and you're allowing, just like somebody was telling me in Alberta, the municipality of Calgary is in the drought area. What do we need Calgary in the drought area for? Like, there's nothing in Calgary, you know, like, so they're definitely not doing it in a proper fashion. We'd like to see the whole province blanketed and then let the producers initiate it that need it, and because it doesn't follow these straight lines, and you'll have a guy over here and you're always missing somebody, and you're catching somebody that doesn't need it, missing somebody here. Using these RMs as designated areas, we're happy that what they've done, but it's not just the best way to do it.
Rick Toney from Gull Lake is chair of the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association. And that's the Beef and Forage Report. It's a little after 12:30 now, 1:30 in Manitoba. It's time for Ag Review, a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, Ag Review.
StatsCan released its model-based principal field crops estimates report this morning. The production estimates are calculated using model-based yields as of August 31st. The model incorporates coarse resolution satellite data from StatsCan's Crop Condition Assessment Program, Statistics Canada's Field Crop Reporting Series, and agroclimatic data. The results are significantly different from the farmer survey conducted back in July. Then, farmers anticipated canola production would fall from 21.3 million tons last year to 19.2 million this year. Today's model-based estimate report pegs canola production at 21 million tons. Farmers completing the July survey also forecast wheat acreage of 24.3 million tons. Today's report has wheat up to 31 million. According to StatsCan, despite dry conditions earlier in the growing season, recent weather changes, especially on the prairies, have improved overall conditions, and the outlook for production is better than originally estimated back in July. November soybean futures hit a 10-year low yesterday as an escalating U.S.-China trade war darkened U.S. export prospects. Corn futures also hit contract lows as the U.S. harvest expanded, while wheat futures rose on tightening global supplies. November Chicago soybeans closed down 9.5 cents yesterday at 8.14 a bushel, the lowest for a most active soybean contract since December 2008. Soybeans sagged after Beijing added $60 billion of U.S. products to its import tariff list in retaliation for U.S. President Trump's planned levies on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. The measures are the latest escalation in an increasingly protracted trade dispute between the world's two largest economies. China is by far the world's top soy consumer, while the U.S. is the number one soybean producer. Bayer is asking a California judge to throw out a $289 million jury verdict awarded to a man who alleged Monsanto's glyphosate-based weed killers, including Roundup, gave him cancer. The company contends the jury's decision was insufficiently supported by evidence presented at the trial by school groundskeeper Dwayne Johnson. He had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which he alleged was caused by years of exposure to Roundup and Ranger Pro, another Monsanto herbicide that contains glyphosate. Johnson's case was the first to go to trial over allegations that glyphosate causes cancer. Monsanto is facing some 8,000 similar lawsuits across the U.S. Bayer, which purchased Monsanto earlier this year, said Johnson failed to prove that glyphosate caused his cancer, and the scientific evidence he presented at the trial fell well below the standard required under California law. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, back in September of last year, concluded that a decades-long assessment of glyphosate risks and found that the chemical is not a likely carcinogen to humans. However, the Cancer Unit of the World Health Organization, back in 2015, had classified glyphosate as probably carcinogenic to humans. The Saskatchewan government says chronic wasting disease has now been confirmed in more than half of the province's 83 wildlife management zones. The disease was first detected in Canada on a Saskatchewan elk farm in 1996. It's fatal to deer, moose, and elk, and has been spreading to wild animals. No human case has ever been identified, but officials say any animal tested and found to have CWD should not be eaten. Hunters are being asked to turn in the heads of harvested animals for free disease testing. Currently, chronic wasting disease has been reported on just one elk farm in Saskatchewan. In Saskatchewan, RM elections are fast approaching, and the deadline to submit nominations is 4 o'clock this afternoon. Election day is scheduled for Wednesday, October 24th. This year's election is for councillors representing even-numbered divisions, and it's for a four-year term. However, it may also include other divisions or the Reeve position if a vacancy needs to be filled. And that is today's Ag Review. It's 12:37 now, 1:37 in Manitoba. We have the Livestock Market Report coming up. We'll check on today's closing U.S. livestock futures. We'll find out about this morning's sale at Heartland Livestock in Yorkton. And we'll also tell you where we're headed this week with GX94's Supper in the Field. It's coming up after this.
Livestock market conditions.
First, here are today's closing U.S. livestock futures. October live cattle, 113.10, down 12 today. December live cattle closed at 117.97, unchanged from yesterday's close. October feeder cattle, 157.87, down 15. November feeder cattle, 157.72, down 10 cents. October lean hogs closed up today at $60, up 82 cents, and December lean hogs, $57.90, down 7 cents. And those are today's closing U.S. livestock futures.
Good afternoon, this is Clayton.
Thank you very much, Clayton, and it's 12:42 now, 18 before 1, before 2 in Manitoba. This is week 5 in GX94's Supper in the Field contest. Of course, we do 6 suppers in the field in the spring, another 6 in the fall, and we are down to our second last supper of the field for this year. And I made the draw from all the entries called in yesterday and selected the name Marie Moore. Marie farms in the Roblin area. Actually, she rents her land. Marie has, I believe she said, about 3 or 4 quarters of land that she leases out now. But we'll visit with Marie nonetheless. We don't care whether you farm the land yourself or certainly if you elect to rent the land. Hopefully, Marie will have a good handle on the farm. I believe her husband passed away a few years ago, but we'll visit with Marie Moore and some of her family and friends and neighbors in the Roblin area. And looking forward to that. Of course, we'll have our supper in the field, courtesy of Kentucky Fried Chicken in Yorkton. We'll also leave Marie with some other gifts from our sponsors, Pattison Agriculture and Sask Milk. Again, congratulations. Our winner this week in Supper in the Field is Marie Moore. Her farm in the Roblin area. All righty, let's move on here. The Swine Health Information Center in the U.S. is investigating the potential risk of the transmission of African swine fever through feed ingredients and is alerting pork producers of that possible risk. Dr. Paul Sundberg is executive director of the Swine Health Information Center.
How significant the risk is a subject of debate. It truly is. The implications for North America, though, are real in that, for example, we know that the PED virus that came in 2013 originated from one of the provinces in China that currently has outbreaks of ASF. Now, we don't know how that virus got into the country, the PED virus got into the country, but the concern is that if PED could get here from there, could it be that that window is still open so we still have an opportunity for that? ASF is a very hardy virus. It survives a long time in tissues. It has about a 100% mortality rate if a pig gets infected or a herd gets infected. And there aren't any vaccines. There are no treatments. The only thing you can do to prevent and to ensure that you don't get it is biosecurity. So we don't have a lot of tools to be able to fight it should it get here, and we're doing our best to try to keep it out.
Sundberg outlines measures already in place to prevent the spread of the virus to North American herds.
We're looking at the Customs and Border Protection for the U.S. in upping the inspections of people that are coming into the country, not just from the Far East, but also from the Eastern Europe and other areas, because we know that that virus is not just in China. We're also asking for USDA to help increase the inspections of any swill feeding, any food waste feeding that is going on with pigs around the country, increase those inspections of licensed feeders, and increase the enforcement of the regulations for those that aren't licensed. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at all of the possible inputs and pathways that the virus could gain entry into the country and harden those systems as best as possible.
Sundberg says it would be devastating if African swine fever does make its way to North America.
Well, the first thing that will happen is we'll lose our international trade. So that will take us out of the international trade markets. And, of course, that will affect the price of live pigs. The next thing that will happen is that we will have to go through a process of isolation and finally leading to eradication. And so it would be a long, arduous process to go from an infection back to free state. The National Pork Producers Council estimates that is in the billions of dollars, not millions, but billions of dollars over over a 10-year process to try to get back to free from one of those high-consequence foreign animal diseases. So it would be a very big hurdle to climb over to eradicate that disease.
Dr. Paul Sundberg is Executive Director of the Swine Health Information Center in the U.S. Of course, African swine fever is already spreading throughout China, and there's fears that it could spread to other Asian and European countries and, of course, make its way overseas. So keep close eyes on that. It's coming up on 1248, now 1:48 in Manitoba. We have the closing grain prices coming up next.
Commodities update.
Canola futures recovered a bit today and closed up. November canola, $487, up 60 cents from yesterday's close. January canola, $492.70, up 10 cents. December, Minneapolis wheat, $5.88 a bushel, up 7¾. December Kansas City wheat closed today at $5.26¼, up 10¼. December Chicago wheat, $5.22½, up 12 cents. December corn, $3.45¾, up 2½ cents. November soybeans recovered after closing yesterday at a 10-year low. Soybeans closed today at $8.30 a bushel, up 16 cents. And December oats, $2.49¼, up 3½ cents. And those are today's closing grain prices. It's 10 to 1 now, 10 to 2 in Manitoba. And welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald. Statistics Canada released its model-based principal field crops estimates report this morning. The production estimates are calculated using model-based yields as of August 31st. The model incorporates coarse resolution satellite data from StatsCan's crop condition assessment program, StatsCan's field crop reporting series, and agroclimatic data. The model-based estimates are significantly different from the farmer survey conducted back in July. StatsCan says despite dry conditions earlier in the growing season, recent weather changes, especially here on the prairies, have improved overall conditions, and the outlook for production is better than originally estimated in July. Commodities broker Ken Ball with PI Financial in Winnipeg says he was surprised by the wide discrepancy between the July farmer survey and today's report.
It's a fairly sophisticated model that they're using, and it's difficult to tell how well it will adapt to very variable weather conditions. You know, recent years have been kind of cool and wet in many parts of the prairies, and it's a very dramatic different summer this year. So I'm a bit surprised that it deviated as much as it did from the July survey report. The numbers themselves aren't necessarily surprising, but again, because there's still so much crop out in the field, we don't really have a good handle on final yield numbers yet for many of the crops, especially canola. But we're just not too sure how to take this model yet. It's going to take a number of years before I think market participants get more confident in its ability to forecast.
This is just the second year that Statistics Canada has used the model-based methodology.
And last year, it seemed to come out more or less in line with the previous crop survey, and traders were wondering if they were just sort of lining them up to make it look like the model was accurate. But in this case, obviously, it's taken quite a deviation. So it's going to be very interesting now to see when we do get the final survey of the year. That report comes out in December. If it does line up with the model survey. The July survey, of course, has a very strong history of being very low, and crop numbers, you know, usually end up being bigger than that survey. This year, we were uncertain about that tendency because the weather in August was, you know, certainly a long shot shy of ideal.
Back in July, farmers told StatsCan they anticipated wheat acreage of 24.3 million tons. Today's report has wheat up at 31 million tons. Also in the July survey, farmers said they expected canola production of 19.2 million tons. Today's model-based estimate pegs canola production at 21 million tons.
That's still a really, really up in the air because, you know, it looked like we were headed for a very early harvest this year with the very warm summer we had, but the very foul weather out west has certainly pushed the harvest far, far back, further back than we expected. Had we had a good August weather, you know, moderate temperatures, reasonable amounts of rain, my guess is the canola crop would have been far bigger than the 19.2 July survey. And again, because that July survey just has a history, especially in canola, of being far too low. But again, because we didn't have a good August of weather in many parts of the country anyway, we just are uncertain about how much bigger to expect the canola crop to be. 2021, I think, is feasible, but there's just a lot of uncertainty about that.
Ball didn't anticipate much market reaction to today's Statistics Canada report.
Canola's didn't seem to show any immediate reaction. Again, nobody's quite sure how serious to take this thing, and it might take 5 or 10 years of working with this model survey before people, you know, get accustomed to it and want to trust it as providing a good picture of the crop size. But there doesn't seem to have been a market reaction, although the fact that the survey did come in that high might take away a little bit of the nervousness out there about whether the crop, you know, is going to be big enough to match demand this year.
My guest is Ken Ball from PI Financial in Winnipeg. November soybean futures plunged to a 10-year low yesterday. Ball says a combination of factors led to the free fall in soybean prices.
The supply of soybeans, is large in the U.S. They're projecting just huge ending stocks, and that's partly because of the trade issues. Although, really, the USDA's projections for exports are only down very slightly from last year. But I don't think we would have got this low this fast if it wasn't for the trade issues. Soybean oil has been making new lows here recently, and the Canadian dollar has been going up. So that's putting a lot of pressure on canola. Canola is extremely high priced relative to the U.S. markets, and I mean extremely. Last time beans were in the 8 to 820 range, canola was trading at 370. And bean oil at that time was actually 2 cents higher than it is now, not lower. So, you know, canola is very high priced, and the big question is, does it deserve to be that high priced? There is a lot of nervousness about the size of the canola crop. This model report today maybe just takes a little bit of edge off that nervousness, but we'll have to wait and see if it does put any pressure on the canola price.
Commodities broker Ken Ball with PI Financial in Winnipeg. Soybean futures did recover today and closed up 16 cents from yesterday's close. It's 12:57 now, 1:57 in Manitoba. Time for Precision Weather. It's a presentation of Sharps Crop Services. GX94's Precision Weather Forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roplin, and Russell regions. Mix of sun and cloud this afternoon, wind light, west-northwest, 5 to 15 clicks, high 12, partly cloudy, frost possible again tonight, wind southeast 10, low near 1. Partly sunny tomorrow, wind east-northeast 10 to 20, and we'll shoot for a high near 11. Looking into Friday, there's an 80% chance of rain, high 9. Partly to mainly cloudy Saturday, high only 6. Isolated showers Sunday, high again near 6. On the temperature roundup this hour, 8 degrees in the Paw, Swan River, Saskatoon, both reporting 12, Dauphin, Brandon, Regina, 11 degrees. Shoal Lake Russell in Hudson Bay, 9. Roblin, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, and Kelvington, 10 degrees. In the Yorkton-Melville region, it's partly sunny. North-northwest breeze at 12, relative humidity 51%, and our temperature 11 degrees. In case you missed it earlier, our winner this week in GX94's Supper in the Field contest is Marie Moore. The Moore Farm is in the Roblin area, just a little bit west of Roblin, right around Lake of the Prairies there. And we're looking forward to visiting with Marie and her family and friends and enjoying our supper of Kentucky Fried Chicken from KFC in Yorkton. Of course, we'll also give Marie some prizes from our other sponsors, Pattison Agriculture in Yorkton and Sask Milk. Again, congratulations, Marie Moore of the Roblin area, our winner this week in GX94 Supper in the Field contest. And of course, we'll be down to our final week in Supper in the Field next week. I anticipate our Supper in the Field contest is going to wrap up well before harvest in the region, and I wouldn't have thought that would have been the case when harvest began. It looked like it was going to be early and probably finish up early as well, but yeah, there's always something that comes along to throw a fly into the ointment, as we say. And in this case, the weather over the past week or so here hasn't been the best, but we're still ahead of schedule, I would say, and There's still time, so we'll just keep our fingers crossed. That's it for today. Looking forward to chatting again tomorrow. Join me at 12:15 in Saskatchewan, 1:15 in Manitoba for GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod MacDonald.